blocking. Deep pattern downfield. Touchdown, Miami. What a throw, Devontae Parker.
Holy smokes, what a drive.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How's it going, everybody? I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we're going to go back out to OTAs as the Dolphins are on the practice field once again, and we are going to hear from a pair of young players and defensive lineman Christian Wilkins, offensive lineman Robert Hunt, and talk about their progress in years 3 and 2 respectively, playing multiple positions and their impact on the field from a film standpoint and a statistics standpoint and their long-term projections. Plus, we're going to crack into our divisional preview starting today with the NFC West, and we're going to finish out the podcast talking about some television and movies, good and bad, all of that and more on this edition of the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
Kicking things off today, a big congratulations to Byron Jones, Christian Wilkins, and Jason Jenkins, the first graduating class of the historically black colleges and universities, Florida Memorial University Construction Trade Program, which is funded by the Miami Dolphins Social Impact Committee, the Lennar Foundation, and the NFL Foundation. And as we go through these OTA version podcasts, I want to go ahead and highlight the guys that speak to the media and use their words to kind of talk about their game, what they provide for this Miami Dolphins offense, defense, and football team as a whole. And we start today with Christian Wilkins, the first draft pick of the Brian Flores and Chris Greer era here in Miami. And he spoke about, well, a lot. He said the number one thing for him is being in proper shape heading into camp and getting in position to where he can go from the word go, so to speak. And that was something he touched on last offseason, just saying that he wants to be ready anytime they need him to go in whatever package, whatever defensive look. And that's even if he chased down the football on the prior play and ran a bunch of yards or logged a bunch of reps in the game already. That's something we're going to come back to here and touch on in just 1 second. But Christian, in this media availability, also touched on graduating from the construction trade program, that experience, and being part of the Social Justice Committee formed by the Miami Dolphins players here last year. Very cool stuff by Byron Jones and Christian Wilkins and so many of the other Dolphins players here in Miami. And speaking of his teammates, he talked about bringing the juice to practice every day. We've seen the celebrations from Christian, all the fun-loving mentality he brings. And he talked about the importance of it's like the 12th day of training camp and guys are getting a little bit sluggish. Maybe they're just kind of tired from the Miami heat and you find a way to get everybody kind of juiced up again and get a good quality practice so you can build that 1% better from the previous day. And speaking of teammates on that same topic, he talked about serving his teammates, a phrase that's becoming commonplace here among this entire Dolphins operation. And I want to go ahead and play the audio from Christian on his place in this organization as a veteran leader and serving his teammates.
This is, it starts with just the work, you know, got to put in the work in the film room, in the weight room, on the field. And then, you know, hopefully guys will follow that. It doesn't always have to be a vocal rah-rah guy or anything like that, but really just, you know, serving my teammates is a big thing for me. Whatever anyone needs, rookies, older guys, younger guys, they need somewhere they can talk, anything. You know, that's what I pride myself on. So definitely just the work, leading by example. And then always, you know, just being myself, bringing that energy, bringing that juice every day. Cause I really do love this game. You know, as much as it is work, it's a game and it's a lot of fun. So bringing that energy, bringing that juice, and just being myself.
And so there you hear Christian talking about his work and his service to his teammates when it comes to everything encompassing the game of football. But I wanted to ask him about playing in this specific defense and the specific scheme, because he does so much work to create chances for other guys, and he gets his production too. But I want to go back to the question I had for Christian, where I asked him, like, what does playing in a defense that gives you so many different looks and different places to line up at, how does it benefit you personally? Well, he came back to talking about his role on the defense as a guy who, as Andrew Van Ginkel would call it, just wants to take care of his grass, and that, again, helps present opportunities for the entire team to make plays. It's not just about one player.
Well, you know, definitely, you know, something a lot I pride myself on is versatility. You know, and, you know, our defense is based off like a multiple scheme, multiple fronts, guys who could do a lot of different things. So that's what, you know, a lot of us pride ourselves on. And really biggest thing for me, like, I just like to be able, wherever I am, I like to just try to make an impact and help the team as best as possible. So that's my job. That's what I got to do. And that's what I try to do down in and down out.
Remember last offseason, I did the stats by position measurement for Christian, taking a look at where each of his run stops and his QB pressures, courtesy of Pro Football Focus, which position they came from. And once again, like last year, it's spread out all across the board. His spray chart is from left field foul line to right field foul line. Of his 18 pressures, he didn't have more than 5 at any one position. He tallied a pressure from 4 different positions and had a run stop from 5 different positions. We're talking about techniques here. So again, 0 technique, head up over the center, 2 technique, head up over the guard, 4 technique, head up over the tackle. And there are variations inside and outside of that as well, all the way out to your wide 9 technique. He ended up with 30 total run stops in his 14 games played this year. On ESPN's run stop win rate, he finished at 41%, which was the 6th best among all NFL defensive tackles. And again, you look at his tape, it's more than just ball production or a couple of sacks. Like defensive tackles in certain schemes, like even defensive ends in certain schemes, if they get 4.5, 5, 5.5 sacks a year, that's something that you are happy with in terms of their box score production, but it's about so much more than that. And Coach Flores has talked about that, and Christian talked about it in his media today about how you can have a 0-0-0 game across the box score. And Coach actually had that exact quote last year, like, you cannot have a single tick in the stat sheet and you can play a good game if we look what you did on film, if you executed your job and fulfilled your responsibility, and that in turn creates chances for other guys. So when he can do that, and when he's not gonna freelance and fall off of a block to try to get himself a TFL or get himself into a gap for the tackle, but rather eat up a double team or stay engaged on a certain block or get his butt around the outside of a guy trying to push him or pull him out of a certain gap and just park his boat right there and stay in position to just fulfill that gap responsibility, because every player has a gap responsibility, right? That's what running the football is creating opportunities to run the ball into certain gaps, and the defense has to respond by filling those gaps with a guy or guys or the scheme. And Christian's one of these guys that just adheres to the scheme, adheres to the system, puts himself in position to make his particular play to take care of his own grass. And that selfless mentality, when you do it 11 times across the board, everyone's going to get their chances. Everyone's going to make plays. I mean, that's when you get Christian Wilkins talking about his interception skill set he got last year when he had that pick against Jared Goff and the Rams. You get to have those fun conversations because eventually he's going to be in position to make a play himself. Or the return touchdown he had where he broke out 42 touchdown celebrations in the end zone. And how much fun was that, even though the play got overturned and came back and we wind up getting the punt on the next couple of plays. But that's neither here nor there. I just think that that is what makes him a perfect player for this front, the perfect first draft pick of this Brian Flores and Chris Greer era. And he missed 2 games last year to COVID protocols. And someone asked him about that in the press conference, and he kind of like shook his head, like he was so disappointed about that fact. And you hear him talk about how much he loves the game. It's these kind of guys that I think that, and obviously the first draft pick again, is the kind of guys that Brian Flores and Chris Greer prioritize in terms of getting the right culture in here. And I think Christian's done a great job of helping establish that culture, become a leader, and be a guy that's really just one of those Miami Dolphins. I think that's the best way I can describe Christian Wilkins. He is a Miami Dolphin through and through. But then back to the production standpoint, you look back at how he bounced back from that time away from COVID, and his form was great as far as PFF grades go. He was in green grades in overall defensive green grade in 5 of the final 6 games he played, and that resulted in 10 QB pressures and 8 run stops over those 6 games. So 18 total plays like that, or plays of production on the ball, that's big time. And I want to finish here with Christian Wilkins on going back to his fun, jovial attitude. I've talked about my first couple of appearances in NFL locker rooms was with this Miami Dolphins team back in 2018 and then in 2019 as well, so Wilkins' rookie year. And I just wanted to ask him one question because I always loved seeing him do the splits on the stage after the national championship when Clemson took the title a couple years back. And I said, hey, Christian, and this was after the Dolphins' first win in 2019. I said, hey, Christian, what do we got to do to see you break the splits back out again? He said, win the Super Bowl, man. And that was a great answer, I thought, the perfect answer to that question. And just, again, it tells you how this guy is just always having fun, but also dedicated to the job. I'm excited for Christian for year number 3, and I'm also excited about Robert Hunt in year number 2. And speaking of year number 2 for Robert Hunt, like, one of my favorite things in this process and the OTAs is just seeing guys it's being more comfortable, right? You show up to your high school, your sophomore year, and you're like, you know where the parking lot is. Maybe you're driving to school now. You know where to get to your locker, where the cafeteria is, where your classes are. You're not quite sweating as much those finer details on top of going to school as a freshman. I love seeing the rookies come back the second year because they're so much more just calm, collected, comfortable, and they give us great answers. It's fun to watch these guys kind of mature right before our eyes. And watching Robert Hunt in this press availability, he said plenty of things that really piqued my interest. Let's go ahead and start here. Some fashion tips. And if you haven't seen the photo yet, Rob had his nails painted with some different art on each fingernail, and he showed them off at the press conference in front of the camera on the Zoom. And he said that it's different, he likes being different, and that he thinks it's groovy. I also enjoyed hearing him talk about playing in the NFL and what that has meant to him. And if you haven't heard Robert's story, we covered it on the podcast last draft season, having Robert here on Drive Time when he was on the podcast, but also some written pieces around the web about the adversity he faced as a child. He talked about his love for the game and his drive, but also the blessing that it is to play in the NFL and how it drives him to compete and earn and keep a job in the National Football League. For the audio here for Rob, I want to play two clips from a couple of questions I asked him first about being detailed, disciplined, and nasty.
I mean, I think that is football, honestly, man. I love football. I love playing football, man. And I think for the position that we play, we have to be tough, smart, nasty, and, you know what I'm saying, disciplined. I think that's just a part of the game, and especially for O-linemen, man. I think that I bring all those aspects to the game, or to my game, at least.
And then I followed up asking Rob about playing multiple positions, as so many guys on this offensive line have done in their career, and how that's benefited him so far in the process in year number two.
I mean, just like I said, everybody's training different positions. So everybody's always helping each other with everything. Like I said, since college, I've always been playing, you know, every position. So I kind of already got the idea of how to like switch, because I played in college left guard, right tackle, left tackle. So I needed to do, I'm willing to do that. So.
And that was one of the things we talked about in some of the pre-draft and post-draft stuff with Robert Hunt last year, was that versatility, and that he had good tape at multiple positions in college down there in the Sun Belt at Louisiana Lafayette. And so, you know, last year it started off for him as an extra offensive lineman, then ended with him playing right tackle for the final 11 games of the season. And there's some fun data and film to showcase a very solid rookie season from the big man. And when the Dolphins ran off right end, that produced 5.6 yards per carry for Miami, and Robert Hunt took over in that week 6 game against the 49ers, and that's when that began in week 6 going forward. So that was the most successful gap on the team in that regard, and Hunt does it with a couple of things, man, power and pop. He times his punch well out of that stance, both in pass pro and as a run blocker, to kind of work with his hands and feet in synchronicity as he leans into those blocks, and he's in control to the point to where when he leans on a guy, he's not off balance. He puts that weight on the opposition, and the rep usually ends from there because he is so big and strong. And I like his skill set as a guard too, because I think he can mirror a little bit better at that position in pass protection, where you're protected on either side of you, and really help keep his quarterback clean. He opens lanes in the running game and also gets out in space and does some things well that way. So I think his pedigree as a guard or tackle, really, frankly, both of them work. And I think when you're looking for some justification is the wrong word, but some evidence of him doing that, I would just go back to that Niners game against Eric Armstead, when he has some really good pass protection reps against one of the better defensive linemen in the National Football League. And that really continued, because he was charged with just one sack allowed all season per Pro Football Focus. That came in week 9 against the Cardinals, and he allowed just 15 quarterback pressures, and only one time was he charged with multiple pressures in a game over the final 7 games of the season. That week 17 game at Buffalo was when he had 3 pressures allowed per PFF, but he had either 0 or 1 pressures allowed from the Denver game all the way through the week 16 game in Vegas, and finished the season with a 95.3% pass protection efficiency grade. That's a mouthful. And just 3 QB hits all season. Those are guard and center numbers, interior numbers, where it's way harder to get pressures. So for a tackle to only allow 3 QB hits on 449 pass blocking reps, that's very, very impressive, especially for a young man in his first season, shortened off season, no OTAs, coming out of the Sun Belt at ULL. I mean, it's not the SEC, you know? I mean, it's the competition matters, and so he was able to make that jump right away in his rookie season. And speaking of making the jump, how about the run blocking? Probably even more so in that regard, because from week 11 onward, he was the 5th highest graded run blocking tackle in the entire National Football League, per PFF once again. The names around him: Trent Williams, that's a future Hall of Famer, Mike McGlinchey has been a stalwart for the 49ers. Teron Armstead, same deal for the Saints. And then there's Robert Hunt, right ahead of Morgan Moses, one of the better tackles in recent memory with Washington, and David Bakhtiari with Green Bay, who's been one of the Pro Bowl tackles in the NFC for years on years now. You guys know I was very high on this kid after watching his college tape because of that explosive lower half, plays with the mean streak, but also that controlled nature. You heard him talk about the game being one of detail, discipline, nasty. That's his game, and I'm very excited about his year two jump. And again, I always love hearing guys in their media in year number two. You can always see a nice level of comfort, and you do that here with Robert Hunt today. So some news, I suppose, here in the middle of the podcast before we get to the divisional preview. The Dolphins will have joint practices with the Atlanta Falcons coming up this preseason. Can't wait to get a look at that. Some of the matchups on the field are going to be so much fun. The highly anticipated Kyle Pitts will be coming to Miami to showcase his game, and I'm excited to watch Eric Rowe and the other safeties and Brandon Jones and Javon Holland and whoever else gets a crack at him, try to defend that guy. Xavier Howard and Byron Jones and all the other corners working against Calvin Ridley and Matt Ryan and the aptitude he brings to the game. You can always learn something from Matt Ryan. Getting a look at Arthur Smith's new offense there in Atlanta, if they run the same offense in Tennessee this year as they ran last year under Arthur Smith with the coordinator promotion. Maybe you get an early look at that ahead of time. So plenty to look at in those joint practices, and it's always great to hit a guy in a different colored jersey when you've been practicing on each other for weeks on end in training camp. And one of my favorite things about the summer months, especially out in the Pacific Northwest, maybe it changes when I get back down to South Florida, but I always love the summertime for the preview material you get in the National Football League across multiple publications, but also for your own studies and purposes. I've been looking at the NFC West in recent days, and that's where we're going to kick off this divisional preview right here, taking a look at the Seahawks, Cardinals, Rams, and 49ers. And we start with Seattle, some big additions they had this offseason. Love the Dwayne Eskridge pick. They add Gerald Everett to the offense as well. They get a couple of offensive linemen with Gabe Jackson from the Raiders. They draft Stone Forsyth. They get Kerry Hyder on the defensive line. They also bring in Aldon Smith, and they add Demarius Randall, Pierre Desir, and Akello Witherspoon to the defensive backfield. I love they also retained Ethan Posick. They brought back Puna Ford, Carlos Dunlap, and they extended Tyler Lockett. Now, the big offseason storyline for the Seahawks was making Russell Wilson happy and making moves in accordance to what he believes can give that team the best chance to win games and secure Russell there in Seattle for the rest of his career, as he has been a Hall of Fame quarterback, one of the best to ever do, in my opinion, top 20, top 25 type of quarterback in this league with his winning medal, his toughness, his durability, never missed a game. I just think the world of Russell Wilson and what he can do with a deep ball, his efficiency as a passer, the way he creates off script. He's just everything you want in a quarterback. Gets the job done every single year, and he's out there every single Sunday. I like they added more depth to the receiver room there with Dwayne Eskridge. I think his speed really complements both DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Thought they lacked receiver depth last year. They go out and get some more of that this season. And speaking of additions, the big kind of change in their defense last year was the coinciding move to go get Carlos Dunlap and have the defense excel that way. But also schematically, they made some changes where last year it was more about fire zone, send pressure, get guys after the quarterback, and hope you can hang out on the back end, and they just weren't getting it done that way, and the offense is having to keep up on the big score or the big shootouts on the scoreboard. And then they made that change with Carlos Dunlap to play more four-man pressure and drop seven, and I thought that jived better with the high-powered offense they have to kind of, hey, if you can put together a 12-play drive on us, that's great, but we can go down and score on four plays in you, so you're going to have a hard time keeping up. And I thought they solved that a little bit last year midseason, but that also coincided with the offense taking a big step back, and so they have to find a way this year to be more balanced, to be more two-dimensional with the run and the passing game. I like the remade defensive line there. Getting Kerry Hyder, I think, is the most underrated move in this division. They also bring in Robert Kimdiche. Why did you fall out that window, Kimdiche? To quote the great Dan Hansis on ATN. The biggest loss for the Seahawks this offseason, in my opinion, was cornerback Shaquille Griffin heading to Jacksonville via free agency. We talk about Akello Witherspoon coming on over, trying to fill some of that void. I'm most curious to see what happens with Jamal Adams in year number two. Typically a player, especially one of his caliber, one of the best safeties in the National Football League, one of the best pass rushers, a kind of a quasi linebacker who plays some coverage and plays the run as well. He's missed some time with some injuries, but when he's out there, one of the very best safeties in the National Football League. And year two of a player in a new scheme, especially after coming over midsummer in a trade with the Jets to the Seahawks last season, typically year number two gets a little more familiarity and you get a little bit more production. out of that player. As far as the Seahawks' overall prognosis, I'm curious to see what happens with the offense. Can they get back to their first half of the season production last year? And the defense, can they get that second half of the season production? And with what scheme do they do to achieve that on the defensive side of the ball? Do they let Russ cook? Do they run the football more with like Pete Carroll loves to do? Fascinating, fascinating team here in a fascinating division in the NFC West. As usual, I'm pretty bullish on the Seahawks. Don't want to lay a prediction down right now, but I think as far as victories goes, I think double digits has to be well within the realm of possibilities for Seattle. From the Seahawks to their biggest rival by the Bay, the San Francisco 49ers, a team the Dolphins are going to have their eyes on for the next couple of seasons. Of course, the Niners' first-round draft pick in 2022, as well as 2023, belongs to the Miami Dolphins, and the reason they got that draft pick from the Niners was so they could go up and select Trey Lance out of North Dakota State, who I think is one of the most physically gifted players in the league already in terms of this position, the size, the speed, the arm strength, the physical raw traits you look for at the position. We'll find out how he can kind of acclimate to the NFL and make that big step up in competition, whether it's this year or next year in the future. Either way, I'm certain Kyle Shanahan has a great plan in place to develop his young quarterback. And in the interim, if they don't want to play him right away, they've got a very capable quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo, who's gone to a Super Bowl. Very accurate quarterback, good pre-snap processor with a great footwork as well. But they, of course, made the biggest move on draft day, going up from 12 to number 3 to get their quarterback of the future. And I think you see all these Shanahan-level type of offenses across the National Football League right now as they kind of make their way across the league with that misdirection, with the outside zone runs and the stretch runs, and get the quarterback to make quick decisions. We've seen what an Aaron Rodgers type of quarterback can do in that system, or the similar system with Matt LaFleur out there in Green Bay. I think Shanahan looks at Trey Lance and says, that guy has the physical traits to take this offense from one level to another level entirely. When that happens, we're going to find out, but it's all based upon the running scheme there in San Francisco. They have so many running backs that are capable of making plays and making big plays and running that scheme to perfection. They add Trey Sermon to that list. They add Wayne Gallman to that list. They've got Jeff Wilson there in tow. Raheem Mostert's the top back on the depth chart, I would imagine, going into the season. Behind Kyle Juszczyk, the best fullback in the National Football League. They have too many running backs to roster. Might be a place where they have to shake some guys free and can possibly be a running back market, so to speak, this offseason, or this summer, I should say, at training camp when that concludes. But I think you consider what Trey Lance can do for that running game at the quarterback position with the boots and kind of pull that thing out on zone read and be an effective runner, and also just hold that extra linebacker, extra defensive end on those zone reads, on those bootlegs, and make them play 10 against 10 football opposed to 11 on 10 with the exclusion of the quarterback in most traditional running games. You kind of have to take that player out of the play altogether when you have a quarterback who doesn't move that well. I also want to see Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel together healthy, with a George Kittle healthy on the football field. Just such a talented roster this Niners team has. I love the way they were able to retain some of their guys, like bringing back Trent Williams, as that offensive line is one of the strengths of the roster once again. Love they brought back Jason Verrett, as well as Kawan Williams and Jaquiski Tartt in that defensive secondary. I'm curious to see, speaking of that defense, what happens going from Robert Saleh to D'Amico Ryans, who was a signal caller for the Texans and the Eagles for many, many years as a Mike linebacker. And that defense in general, getting, again, more players back with Fred Warner and the way he pairs up with Dre Greenlaw. That's one of the best linebacker duos in the National Football League and should help D'Amico Ryans really get creative with how he uses both those players, especially Fred Warner, because he's one of the most unique players at that position. And then also getting Nick Bosa back should be a big, big lift for that team to go along with Eric Armstead. And we should see a bigger jump in production in year two from Javon Kinlaw up front. The Niners offseason, they add Trey Lance, Wayne Gallman, Trey Sermon, Travis Benjamin, Mo Sanu, and Kevin White were additions to the receiver core. Those are some names from yesteryear, you might remember, that have had a lot of production in this league. And Kevin White, of course, a former 7th overall draft pick, just hasn't worked out for him. Aaron Banks along the offensive line, talk about getting stronger up front, as well as Alex Mack in the middle. Samson Ebukam and Arden Key and Jordan Willis are a trio of really good situational rushers in different packages. Tony Jefferson, a big boost to that secondary as well. So is Tavon Wilson. And then rookies Talanoa Hufanga and Diamander Lenoir out of Oregon. I know I butchered that pronunciation, but those guys should give that team a shot in the arm, as they have depth, they have top-of-the-line talent, they have the schemes, they have the coaches. This is a good football team you're rooting against this year because of the draft picks, but they definitely built this team in a way that could contend, I think, right away in 2021. going out to the desert in Arizona with the Cardinals. They made a bunch of moves this offseason as well. They bring back Colt McCoy to be the backup quarterback, James Conner, the running back there from Pittsburgh. They add A.J. Green, but Rondale Moore was the big addition at the receiver position. To me, one of the most electrifying college receivers over the last couple of years there at Purdue. They bring in Kelvin Beachum and Rodney Hudson and Max Garcia and Mason Cole and Brian Winters, five offensive line additions to that front to help protect Kyler Murray and get more out of the running game. They bring in J.J. Watt, was the big marquee signing of the offseason for them. He'll give a great pass rush alongside Chandler Jones on the opposite side of the formation, but they also go out and bring in Zaven Collins, who is a do-it-all kind of jack-of-all-trades linebacker who had the great draft day call there with Steve Keim as well as Cliff Kingsbury. I think he's going to be a good player in this league. Malcolm Butler and Robert Alford were brought back into the fold. Butler, a free agent from the Titans, and Alford brought back after being released by the Cardinals. He's had some injury history there as well. And Malcolm Butler, you guys know about him. He's been productive in this league for a long, long time. I'm curious to see how they work in these pieces on defense, because Isaiah Simmons didn't play a whole bunch last year. He got more time as the year went along, but I think finding his role in that defense is going to be integral to their success as a defense as a whole. Buda Baker is probably the best safety in the National Football League for my money. Love the way that guy plays the game. The Cardinals, I think, got better. But this division, like, it's so tough. Do you put them first, second, third, fourth? I don't really know where any of these teams go, but I think Arizona, just like the Seahawks and Niners before them, definitely both could win double-digit games this year. Kyler Murray's year three kind of jump is the big key here, I think. The injury at the end of last season was really difficult on him with the shoulder and kind of preventing him from doing things in the running game and being the dynamic threat that he has come to be. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year with that offense and what Cliff Kingsbury puts together. They made a bunch of moves on the offensive line, at receiver, at the running back position. They made some changes on defense. And of course, getting J.J. Watt and Zaven Collins should help that defense out quite a bit. Are they the best team right now? I don't know. We'll find out here in a few months. Let's go ahead and finish up with the Los Angeles Rams here on our NFC West preview. And they've been one of the more fascinating teams in terms of the way they approach the offseason. Like, draft picks aren't just there to be draft picks. They're there to help them acquire good veteran players, and they have done that more than anybody else in the league in recent years. The Brandon Cooks trade, the Jalen Ramsey trade, now Matt Stafford, who is really the big marquee storyline of the offseason. I think in the NFL, not just for the Rams or the NFC West, but the entire NFL, as they go away from Jared Goff, just 1 year after an extension, or 2 years, I should say, after his contract extension. We talked about the move for the Niners in the system, getting more explosive at the position to go off script more. That's kind of what the Rams hope to get here with Matt Stafford, who I think is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in recent memory in the National Football League. And just, I want to see what he looks like elsewhere, because he's been with the Lions for so long. I became a huge fan of his game after that rookie season game against the Browns, where he threw a touchdown pass with his left shoulder dislocated, had to come off the field. That was an incredible play from an incredible player. And he comes to Los Angeles with a nice arsenal of weapons to throw the football to. Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp are some of the most underrated players in the National Football League. They were banged up along the offensive line last year. That should get better this year, I think. Can they repeat the defensive dominance they showed last year? Because it's tough to be the number one defense year in and year out, even though the Seahawks did it for like 4 years in a row. But it should help that they have Aaron Donald, who's the best player in the National Football League, with the flexibility, the durability, the strength, the hands. Everything he does is just elite, and I love watching him play football. They're also very strong on the back end with Jalen Ramsey. They did lose John Johnson in that defensive secondary. We'll see how they replace him back there, but Taylor Rapp has been a nice safety for them out of the University of Washington. Their offseason was basically Matt Stafford. They went out and got Stafford, and they brought in Tutu Atwell and DeSean Jackson to help give them more speed at that receiver core. I'm curious to see what happens in the running back with Cam Akers, one of my favorite players in that draft last year. He has the, I guess, pole position to be the bell cow there, although Daryl Henderson is one of the better running backs in the league too at that spot for the Rams, and how this defense can repeat their performance from last year. And then of course Matt Stafford with the big change coming out to Los Angeles. This NFC West division I think is the best in the NFL. I don't really know how it's going to shape out right now. We'll get to the predictions on a future episode when we do our actual official Dolphins Drive Time podcast predictions here on the NFL, but I think all four of these teams could be playoff contenders. All four of them could be double-digit win teams. Someone has to lose out. I'm not sure who that's going to be right now, but this division is very tough, and I'm glad we're not playing them this year. The best player in the division for my money is Aaron Donald. The best quarterback is Russell Wilson. The best player on the opposite side of the ball of a non-quarterback is George Kittle on the tight end position there for the Niners. And for me, the best coach is Kyle Shanahan. So that's your NFC West preview. We're going to do all eight divisions and finish with the AFC East in a few episodes down the line here in the coming shows, the coming weeks, the coming months here on the Drive Time Podcast. I want to close out the podcast with this note here, and I apologize for the sound in the background. I'm having a hell of a time getting my daughter to take a nap today, but we have to push through because this is how we do it, baby. But I wanted to talk about some shows I've been watching recently. Is it just me or is nothing new coming out? And I get the pandemic was probably a big part of that, but man, I'm just like rewatching all these old shows that I love. I just finished up watching Rick and Morty for, I don't know, the sixth time through in anticipation for the new season on June 20th, which I think is Father's Day. What a gift to me that'll be. And as you could tell by my recent run on references, I had watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for, again, I don't know, the fourth or fifth time through. And I go back and forth on who the best character is in the show. And like Dennis and the Dennis system is great. Frank, when they have the intervention for Frank, is great. Charlie is just tremendous as always. Dee is fantastic and hilarious too. But I think I came out of this run thinking that Mac is the best character. And by best, I mean the worst, because that's what those characters' aims are, to be the worst person possible. But great show. Can't recommend that one enough. Now, talking about some bad stuff, I watched The Conjuring, the new Conjuring movie, knowing exactly what I was getting myself into going in. But my goodness, what an absolute travesty of a film. I mean, I have my opinions on modern day cinema, and I know that, you know, the boon of the golden era right now of television's kind of taking away from cinema, and actors are going more towards TV, but like, is that what they produce now in theater? Like, it's always a dark screen, everyone's whispering their lines, and when you have a one-year-old and you have to kind of keep things quiet, you go from going from 80 on the volume down to 40, and you have to have your finger on the remote at all times. It's not very much fun, because all they want to do is have those moments where something jumps out and scares you. It's just impossible to watch, impossible to get into. They have a whole series of those Conjuring movies. I don't get it. Maybe it's not for me. I also don't like the Marvel movies. Maybe I'm the one that's wrong here, but I just feel like movies have really, really gone by the wayside in recent years. I have my flight coming up across the country. I think I'm going to run back the Bo Burnham special on that flight. I cannot recommend that enough. It's called Inside. It's not as funny as it is good. He just really put together a masterpiece with that Netflix special. And I'm not usually a musical comedian fan, but he killed it in this special. I'm thinking about downloading some Silicon Valley again. A couple of my close personal friends recommended the movie The 5-Year Engagement because of our move across the country and the familiarity there with me and my family and that movie. So if you guys have any recommendations for me, I would love to hear them. Again, I have 6-hour flights all the time, so let me know so I can get my entertainment on there in between working and scrolling on Twitter on those flights. As for today's time, that is going to be my time. We have more media, more OTA notes, and next week, mandatory minicamp coming your way. Then we take a bit of a vacation in the football world, but not a vacation from you, as we'll pivot to 2 shows a week right up to training camp. We'll do our annual positional previews on those episodes, sprinkle in our divisional previews across the entire NFL, and ramp up for yet another football season before we get to training camp and are back at it daily covering practices. Very, very exciting times are ahead on Drive Time and with the Dolphins and in the National Football League. As for today's time, that is going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Wherever you get your podcast from, go ahead and leave us a rating, leave us a review. You can follow me on Twitter at WingfulNFL, follow the team at Miami Dolphins, check out the Fish Tank and the Audible podcast, and of course, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up.